Libya Castro and Olafur Olafsson share with many other artists the experience of transnationality and therefore mobility. They represent Iceland at the 54th Venice Biennial, and they address the notions of nationalism and national identity within an institution that historically has been structured by nations, questioning, by the means of a negative statement, on an easy question: does your country exist? This is an announcement from Libya and Olafur. Your country doesn't exist. Their practice often investigates political subjects. As the title of the show in Venice, Under the Construction, alludes to, one of their most common strategies is the subversion of the criteria of constructiveness of power structures and relations. This is Radio Papessa, and you are going to listen to the interview Olafur Olafsson had in Venice with Lorenzo Fusi, curator of the Liverpool Biennial.
First of all, thank you very much for making the time in these very busy Venetian days for an interview. We are here with Olafur Olafsson. The title of the exhibition is Under Deconstruction, which is already per se pretty much of a statement. Would you share with us the reasons and motivations behind the choice of the title for the exhibition?
It refers to the works in the show. It refers to all the works in different ways. And at the same time, you can also see it partly as a reference to our work in general, of dissecting and deconstructing and putting them again together in a different way, or putting together different elements in order to see something from a new point of view. And of course, I mean, it refers to also, you know, from out of the work, I mean, to a world which we live in today, which is, you know, in many ways under deconstruction as we speak. So,
and I guess it's also an element of critique in representing one country and deconstructing the notion of citizenship and nationalities as well. And as a matter of fact, this is really much relating to one of the four works that you're presenting over here. The title is Your Country Doesn't Exist. I know that this is a sort of an ongoing project, in fact. Can you just kind of trace back the origins of this project and the different phases of its elaboration for us?
We started the work in Istanbul in 2003, as you have here on a picture in front of you, a bust of a mannequin, where it's written in Turkish on the chest, Ulken Satin Yoki, Your Country Doesn't Exist. This was a part of a work called 20 Minus Minutes, and this was at the time when we were doing a residency at Platform Guarantee. It was exactly the time when the USA was gathering forces, gathering alliances to invade Iraq. Being in Istanbul at that time was moving. Firstly, there were many demonstrations in Istanbul, both big and super tiny. You know, you would see 5 people demonstrating, or you would see, you know, a couple of hundreds, and of course the police and the military police, you know, and arresting people and so on. But then also being in Istanbul, you were actually just at a range near enough to Iraq where Saddam had threatened to, you know, even shoot missiles. And in the whole world, people were protesting, you know, the invasion. And this was only partly televised and mediated by the official big media, and definitely not listened or heard by the nation states or the politicians in charge. So this gave us this question of who owns a country? You know, do I owe my country? In continuation of that, you know, this sentence came to us, which we put forward in this provocative manner, you know, instead of asking, you know, does your country exist or anything like that, we put it forward as a fact, as a statement. So it wasn't planned in the beginning, but it took on this life, and we allowed it to get this life of being or becoming a campaign. Actually, I mean, it's quite special, I think, in a way, to have a work which, you know, is transforming itself into, you know, post-stamp. Wall drawings, now a video work, video music work, neon text here on the facade, big billboards in public space, radio and television announcements, kind of appropriating the language of campaigning. But also this work, actually, to bring back to the Venice Biennial, I mean, obviously it was one of the first things we thought after we were nominated or selected to show for Iceland. We had to make up our mind, are we or are we not going to show this work? You know, there was an obvious question to us. In the end, we did. Then there was a big question, how can we put this work up in public space in Venice, which it's not the easiest place on the planet to work in public space here. And one day passing through into the city, a gondola passed by with a couple of tourists and a singer. And it just like struck us both like, wow, this is, there we have our medium.
Now, especially considering that Radio Papissa is a sound project, I'm very interested in analysing with you the musical and the sound aspect of your work, which I think is also a sort of a thread element, which is kind of unifying and bonding a series of the pieces. You have been collaborating now for quite some time with an Icelandic composer whose name is Karolina Eriksdóttir, and you have been working, as far as I know, at this new public rendering of Your Country Doesn't Exist. And also there's another piece which I really, really like and is also included in the exhibition, which is basically a musical reading of the Icelandic constitution. Can you just maybe just spend a few words making this passage from these two musical interventions, so to speak, and how these two works relate to each other?
Well, the Constitution of the Republic of Iceland is the first work we did with Karolina. And before that work, we had made a work called O Holy Times Thousand, which is our rendering of the national anthem of Iceland, which in its correct title is called O God of Our Country. For that piece, we used the original music score as it is, but we, through a simple formula, reorder the words in the lyrics. So the first word in the first line stays the first word. Second word in the first line becomes the first word in the second line. Third word in the first line becomes the first word in the third line, and so on. So we rearrange kind of vertically the verse, so it becomes a dadaistic. But then again, it is a poetry, or it is, so, you know, we are also used to these kind of gaps between words in poetry. It's quite weirdly balancing between very acceptable and strange, and we had that performed live unannounced in the marketplace in Reykjavik, which is the busiest public space in Iceland, in Reykjavik. There is a baritone singer who was wearing, again, the T-shirts, the same dotted T-shirts we are using here. It was the first or the second time we used the T-shirts as a performance clothing. And he just appears there. So the work we made out of it, that was a live performance, which we document with one camera, one shot. After doing that work, we went on thinking, you know, that had brought us further or closer to, like, the representation of a nation, of its identity, and every nation has its anthem, and they come to exist through different situations and moments, you know, and they are all influenced by that. And then we started thinking of, you know, it brought us to think about the constitution, which is also this text, you know, there is the anthem, and then there is the constitution, and the constitution, you know, is the foundation of the society, or the contract we kind of have, or we make for ourselves to live together. And I had never read the Icelandic constitution, and that made me curious also. I asked myself, why have I never read it? And so we had just made this other music work, and the idea came to, why is that not a music work? And then we just contacted Karolina, who I also know personally very well from before, and she liked and understood the idea, connected to it profoundly, very easily. And then we went into a dialogue about it, and which kind of music could or should that be. And well, of course, we had contacted her because we wanted to make it really a classical contemporary music piece, not a pop song, or we really wanted to give it that weight, that presence. But in doing so, in working with Karolina, we realized also a thing about classical music, which is quite interesting, and that is the level of abstraction in the thought and in the making of classical music. I mean, it basically can take on whatever form. Of course, it's a challenge for a composer to write a music piece to 8 pages of text, and how can you play with that and so on. And she quickly saw that she would not choose, like, she would, rather than choosing one style or play with different ideas, and we agreed on allowing the work sometimes, or the music sometimes, to emphasize the words or the ideas, sometimes ignoring them and sometimes contradicting them. What basically happened, I think, in many ways, is that the constitution, which was not in the discussion at that time in Iceland, but today, as we speak, it's being rewritten. So actually, this work is becoming a farewell or a requiem or a, you know. But what kind of happened was that classical contemporary music is not like the hottest item on the table, you know, every day. And so it's also not the constitution. For me, I mean, putting it simply, it was like minus and minus came together and made a plus. You know, I got that reaction from many people, that they were really surprised that they were so interested and so taken by the music, and they just didn't notice that 45 minutes would pass. And on the other hand, they were like super surprised that they got so taken and interested by the constitution. During the making of that work, we were invited to Manifesta, and then we made Caregivers, which is a video we made in Trentino. And that was a work which we started on, and we had no idea which form it would take. Doing the research, we came across this text, a newspaper article on the issue of caregivers, foreign or migrant caregivers from Ukraine living in Italy. And as we were reading it more times and researching, this article laid itself out for us as a piece of poetry, with its kind of entrance and introduction, pictures and images, statistics, and, you know, like a whole journey kind of. And suddenly we thought, you know, because we were just in the making of the constitution, which is 8 pages of text, and we thought, yeah, a journalistic article, that's nothing, it's 1.5 page, it's almost a pop song, you know. So sure, we asked her for that, if she was interested, and again, we had a very good common understanding of the concept, and so there was the second piece, and now the third piece that we have made with her is here now in the show, Il tuo paese non esiste. And it was very interesting to develop this work here in Venice in relation to the city and its music history as well. Because, you know, before we started, I know nothing more than anyone else about serenades, for example. So we chose this form, and it was amazing to look into the history of serenades. Right away, we knew we wanted to have a female singer. We wanted to take it from the other side, then, you know, the serenades today, all the gondola singers today in the city are men, so we for sure wanted a woman. But then looking into the history, we found out that until 1800, I think, or 1900 even, most of the serenades were sung by women. Then we found out that the serenade had been used as a communication form between the inside and the outside walls of prisons in Naples, for instance. And also when we started to talk with Carolina about the form, we realized that this would have a different kind of possibilities to play with, since we were in control of the lyrics, let's say. This time we were not taking a journalistic article, we were not taking a constitution, and we were going to first have the lyrics just, this is an announcement from Libya and all over, your country doesn't exist. The same text as we have used for radio announcements and television announcements. But then while we were working on this show, we were producing a book. Partly, we commissioned several people we have worked with on the different works to write about the works, first work being from 1998 and the last one, you know, this year. And one of the texts was written by Antonia Masiaka on Your Country Doesn't Exist. And we were very happy with the text, and we found it a very strong text. And the idea came one day to appropriate extract paragraphs or elements from that text, which is about the work Your Country Doesn't Exist, and reflects on its ideas, possible meanings or interpretations, and to appropriate that text as the lyrics of the work itself. So in that sense, we composed the lyrics based on a commissioned text to Antonia, which was not commissioned for being lyrics, you know. When talking to Caroline about the music, we firstly thought of medieval music. We wanted to be pre-nation state, and then we were listening both to guitar music and actually old medieval brass bands. And we developed ideas of having actually 2 or 3 gondolas performing the piece, having different instruments on different boats. And these were ideas also that Carolina came with and she mentioned to us and showed us the or played us the work of an American composer from the beginning of last century, who had been making experiments with kind of parallel composing. And then Carolina realized like that actually these ideas are born in Venice. In the end of the Baroque time, there was a composer here in Venice who did the first actually stereo, pre-stereo, you know, like this place where he was placing the musicians and the singers in different corners of the church in order to give us a round,
yeah, surround effect.
So we were also inspired with this, and in the end it was like way too complicated to work with more than one gondola, and but still all these things somehow came into the work and in the end into the video, in the way we already were thinking of the ambient and how the city would come into the work. And in the end we chose and the guitar and the trumpet, you know, which is a very particular music or instruments to put together in one piece for a classical music piece, which we found very interesting. But the trumpet having the announcing ability and the guitar the more lyric, and when they meet they have this very interesting dialogue, I think, in the piece.
Entering into the last piece, which is an exhibition, which is a sound installation, which I personally totally loved. When you were describing to me the idea before it happened, when we met in Iceland the last time, I couldn't really imagine exactly how it could have materialized. I mean, I understood the principle and then the concept, but I couldn't really yet grasp the power that it would have been acquiring once installed in Venice. Can we talk about exercising ancient ghosts, which I think is a very beautiful, though very ethereal, ephemeral presence here in Venice?
Yeah, when we saw this site, we just loved it. What happens, I mean, then when people do come, you know, they are here and they take the time and they, you know, they... So what we realized is the space offered such a journey. You know, it has two entrances, completely different facades, one from the other. It's very particular architecture. It's a former laundry house, then it became a motor garage for restoring or repairing boats. It has this strange house where the stairways take you out to the terrace, and then the facade looks like a fabric. So we realized we really wanted to work with the site, with the spaces. We knew right away that we wanted to have a piece on the roof. And in thinking on pieces on the roof, I mean, we went through several ideas. And in the end, we saw that exercising ancient ghosts would really, might be really a perfect piece for the roof. We presented this work before in Napoli, but, you know, we presented it knowing that we had not yet presented it fully. And there it was only an audio installation, and we had wanted to present it with a vase to give the work a kind of a center, in a way that it's not just coming from all over, and give it this physical body, and the vase is like a vessel and it's transporting this from wherever it comes from and so on. And then we really wanted to create a space where people could take the time and enjoy the piece. We were invited by curator Patricia Pulles from Rotterdam to come to Naples and produce a work for a show that she was putting together, Il Ventre di Napoli. And we went there with several ideas. We started with several parallel researches, and one of the thoughts we had was we really wanted to see if we could use the opportunity to make a work really from, let's say, the Mediterranean area and possibly going back in time, connecting to the history of the area somehow. We went to visit Herculaneum. We hang out a lot in the archaeological museum, which is fantastic in Naples. We came across there, of course, the secret chambers or the, you know, the pornographic and erotic depictions or on vases and plates and so on. We started to look more into it, and we came across profession of feminist archaeology, which, you know, was so obvious when we came across it that, of course, exists, and we just weren't aware of it, and that it was really interesting. And we came across a law from 5th century before Christ in Athens, which prohibited foreigners or local Athenian men or women to have relationship or marriage or sexual relationship with a foreigner. And we found it amazing to find a law from that time that so explicitly and concretely put this down, and there was a fine and property of people would be confiscated, and anyone could file charges against anyone, and the one who would do it would get part of the property and so on. So, you know, we really thought let's go into researching this more and see what there is more of text on women and foreigners from that time. You know, what are the thoughts from then? And of course, in looking into ancient Greek history, you know, like the cradle of European culture and cradle of democracy and so on. But it's amazing to see how misogynist and xenophobic the society was, you know. And the wives, the Athenian wives, were locked up at home. So we chose to look into, you know, literary or literature texts, partly or mainly from theater pieces and political texts or juridic texts. And we realized, I mean, this is not our special field. So we went into trying to find a person from the universities to collaborate with us. In doing so, we came across Claudia Montepaone, who is a historian, professor of classical history. Her view is from a gender perspective. We met her and we explained her the concept, and she loved the transgression of it. And she put together for us a fabulous team of five PhD researchers who we went into a dialogue with about this, and they found material for us. And then we chose, in dialogue with them, fragments. You know, we chose to activate this thought through, you know, and give it life in our present time through having a text performed by a local Napolitan woman and a foreigner. The man is from Bali, while having sex. And, you know, when we got the idea and we have the concept, and you know, then you still don't know how it's going to be, you know?
Platone, filosofo, Atene, quinto, quarto secolo avanti Cristo.
Meneseno. Socrate dice nel dialogo di riportare un discorso che ha sentito pronunciare da Aspasia, la compagna di Pericle, donna e straniera.
Perché i principi di onestà e libertà della città sono così saldi e sani per natura, avversi al barbaro, grazie al fatto che i greci sono puri e senza mescolarsi con i barbari.
In effetti.
For there cohabit with us none of the type of Pelops, or Cadmus, or Aegyptus, or Danaus, and numerous others of the kind, who are naturally barbarians, though nominally Greeks.
But our people are pure Greeks and not a barbarian blend, whence it comes that
our cities... Conclusively, I think it's also very interesting that according to the ancient Greek laws, Libya, she wouldn't be allowed to represent Iceland. Which I think is like, you know, it's probably an extra element which has been kind of brought into the work by, you know, you representing specifically one country by having one Icelandic and one person who's not Icelandic by descendant.
About this show here, when it was developing and coming together, when we saw it was starting to be made of pieces made in different places, you know, because that was a very, not an easy thing for us, like, where were we going to make the works for this show, you know. Now we live in Berlin, between Berlin and Rotterdam. We have been living mainly in Holland the last 12 years, and now we've been in Berlin for 3 years. But we, you know, we work a lot in situ, on site, on the places where we either go or where we're invited to work. But lately, you know, we have also been resisting that, you know, to be a slave of the site or slave of the project. So we also have found it lately extremely interesting to make a work in a studio, you know, which can be anywhere, you know, like, I mean, which is of course what, you know, that's, but so for us that has a special thing in its own, you know, a different kind of thing. So we were thinking, are we going to produce the work in Venice? Are we going to produce it in Iceland? Are we going to produce it in Berlin? How are we going to do it? And in the end, we kind of did all of that, you know, and there's the Constitution piece from Iceland. There's the Il tuo paese non esiste video and the text work made here in Venice. There is the Exorcising Ancient Ghosts, made also in Italy, but in Napoli. Going back to Greece, I'm very happy with the mixture of those different angles from the different regions, from the culture, in this big zone which we are all a part of, but it has certain borders, and at some point one place starts to get another name and, you know, has developed its own history and so on, which we are just so interested in learning more about through the, and being in dialogue about with the people at the different places and so on. Of course, you know, the work brings up questions by people. People relate to it from out of their thoughts and location and what the situation is in the different places. So, you know, in general, people relate to it in similar ways, but there are particularities in every place. So, I mean, putting it up in Belgium, people just like look at it and say, yeah, sure, of course, no, it doesn't exist. You know, now I've been having strong reaction from people from Israel who are very taken by the piece or by the work, you know, and really affects them strongly. In Iceland, for example, when we put it up there, it was the time when there was the largest construction ever being started largest construction ever being made in Iceland is a huge dam, flooding of a huge area underwater, and people were protesting that heavily. So people related this sentence then also directly to something like that, you know, like physically the land was not really under their control. Or for us, the thing is, this your, I mean, many people often, you know, then you have all the 1,000 Freudian slips that people get, you know, like people so often wrongly quoted, you know, like saying, you know, a critic in Holland wrote about the show where we had this piece, and she wrote that the piece, "This is not your country," is not what the text is, you know, but that is a projection coming from that place, because there's been a strong change in Holland, in firstly from in the, you know, 60s, 70s, being welcoming migrants, and then a total reversal of putting them into prisons simply and kicking them out of the country. This Freudian slip of hers there, you know, like reflects on how, you know, a certain mentality in the country, you know, this is not your country, go away, you know, like towards foreigners. The Icelandic ambassador in Germany, when we were collaborating with him on the piece here upstairs, painting, which he painted for us, and had to get the permission from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs to do so. And firstly, they said, well, better not. And then we insisted on, you know, continuing the dialogue and see if we could find a diplomatic compromise, since, you know, that is his job. And we thought, you know, we had been talking about compromises, and I mean, sometimes a compromise can be quite crazy, because it's, in the end, it's not what anyone wants, but it's something else, and it in the end, it might even be crazier or weirder or whatever than anyone particularly wanted. So instead of being like being a less, it can even be more strange than you could even have thought of yourself. So, okay, he went into this dialogue with us, and he's a philosopher himself, and he had also a personal problem. He felt instrumentalized by us, and he had the difficulty of becoming a part of a work, which I understand, you know, and this was very interesting in the dialogue as well. But then he came up, because it is a painting by numbers, or do-it-yourself painting, so the work is titled Your Country Doesn't Exist, Do It Yourself, which of course has a kind of several connotations in it on its own. But so the idea was that, you know, we would draw the lines and number them, 1 and 2, 1 is white, 2 is black, and he would fill it in, because the point was, as you know, as Iceland is in a state of financial and, well, an identity crisis or transformation, he didn't have any, the embassy didn't have any budget for producing a new work, but we asked him therefore to give labor, to provide the labor of making the piece, and we asked him to do it. And in the end, he suggested to not fill in the N and the comma and the T, leaving the painting to say your country does exist. And in the end, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs agreed on this. So this was the result of that collaboration. So he repeatedly said, he referred to the work as, my country doesn't exist. You know, and he had to laugh so much at himself in doing so, because it revealed his feeling of being an ambassador of a country that is so tiny, that he feels also that it doesn't exist through its little scale, you know. And so on one hand, you know, in the case of Iceland, for example, it's also this question, you know, is your country existing really amongst the other countries? So, you know, that's also another thing to it. But of course, for us, I mean, you know, in the times we are living today, where, you know, the big capital flows freely over borders, you know, that's a deconstruction of nations in its own, you know, along with many other things. And the thing is, you know, we are not saying countries don't exist. They do exist. But we actually, by putting your country doesn't exist, we are kind of raising this issue also of belonging, or of being in control, or of, you know, empowerment, or do you have a say, or who has a say, who owns your country, who owns countries. The country is also a construction. Also, countries don't exist in their, you know, own right. They are a creation. You know, we have made them. So we have made them, and we keep on changing them, and we make the laws for the, but we, I say, I could also be saying they, or some. That's kind of all the things that we want to kind of approach, hopefully, with the work.
And of course, the element which I think is more interesting is about bringing the notion of citizenship and the notion of country into a scheme such as that provided by Venice, which is so strongly based upon the institutionalizations of countries, and the idea that those countries have here to affirm themselves as existing is kind of implying a sort of a self-irony, I would say, in stating exactly the negation of that sense of nationality. So that would be my conclusive statement. Thank you very much for the interview, and thank you very much for being here.
This interview was recorded by Radio Papesse at the 54th Venice International Art Biennial.
What about the location? Tell me, you don't really expect that people will pass from one country to another like they move between two apartments?
RadioPapesse.org